Ready?
Are you ready?
Everybody ready?
Ready.
Okay.
We're on the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to welcome everybody to our Wednesday, March 4th, ADA board meeting. And Sherry, would you please call the board members?
Ms. McKinnon.
Here.
Mr. Kendi.
Here.
Ms. Bandy.
Here.
Mr. Fogle.
Here.
Commissioner Anderson.
Here.
Mr. Carl.
Here.
Mr. Cruz.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Would you continue with public and staff, please?
We'll start right here.
Mark Greeno, Foster Garbage Council, IGA. Brad Walker, Bank of America. Part of the IGA. Mike Newman, Hilltop Securities, Financial Advisor, IGA.
Gary Uday, Department of Law.
Cynthia Cartwright, Supreme Dunnigan and Long.
Alan Weissner, David.
Ben Fugel, New Jack, Alaska.
Doug Ward, Industrial Development Service.
Tom Bouchin, ADA.
Linda Dunn, ADA. Brenda Applegate, ADA.
Wes Smith with IGA.
Dan Britton with Interior Gas Company.
Steve Agassi with Interior Gas Company. Kevin Dunkler with ADA.
Paula Brenner, Alaska Journal Company.
Linda Saga, ADA.
Sherry Severson, ADA.
Anybody online?
Is there anybody on the line with us today?
Good afternoon. This is Eric Whaley from Bank of America.
Thank you, Eric. Anybody
also,
else?
This is Steve Noble from Dell.
Thank you, Steve. Anybody else?
This is Sam Chapman from ADA.
Thank you, Sam. Next. Anybody else? Any members of the public online?
This is Alex Johnson with National Parks Conservation Association.
Okay, what's your last name again, Alex?
Johnson.
Johnson. Okay, thank you. Anybody else?
I'm here, Carson Roger Vita.
Thank you, Carson. All right.
Thank you, Sherry. Before us, on item number four is the agenda approval.
I motion to approve today's agenda. This is Albert.
Thanks, Albert.
Second, this is Bill.
Thank you, Bill. Comments or additions, deletions? I do have one addition I'd like to add to the executive session, and that would be after HEX LLC personnel matters. Any objection to adding that? Hearing none, that's we'll add it. And so with that, is there any objection to adopt the agenda as amended? Hearing no objection, our agenda is now adopted. That brings us up to public comments. I'll remind everybody that please limit your comments to 3 minutes. State your name and affiliation, if you have an affiliation, clearly for the record. With that, I'll go online. Is anybody online wishing to make a public comment? Again, anybody online? Is there anybody in the boardroom? Mr. Ward, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Doug Ward. I reside in Ketchikan, and retired in December of 2018 from a 30-year career I developed at the Ketchikan Shipyard. My retirement lasted about 3.5 days. Mr. Jagelski talked to me in coming out of retirement, helping out with the development of the Seward Shipyard. And since then, I've become involved in Resolve out in Dutch Harbor. I'm working on some of the issues out there. But I want to speak to agenda items 8, D, and E, and let you know how supportive I am and excited to see this kind of activity being brought forth by ADA. For over 30 years, I've fought to close the cynicism that exists around bringing marine vessels from Puget Sound to Alaska, and have been told every reason under the sun why it can't be done. I believe that this finance facility that you're bringing forward today is the first step in rationalizing Alaska's marine industrial support sector, which I personally believe is one of the best and easiest value-added opportunities that we have for manufacturing in this state, and that this is really the beginning, I think, of what become a fairly broad program to develop our port harbors and shipyards so that we can take care of our own marine vessels in the state. So thank you very much for this, and I urge you to pass these resolutions and scale up with no ship from last year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. Is there anybody further in the boardroom wish to make a comment? Seeing none, I'll close the public comment section. It brings us up to item number six, prior minutes for January 15th, 2020.
I move the prior minutes of January 15th, 2020 as presented.
Second, this is Albert.
Thank you, Bill and Albert. Any comments, deletions on the minutes? Any objections to approval? Hearing none, the minutes for January 15, 2020 approved. That brings us to on our agenda item number 7, new business. And I guess first up is a presentation by the Interior Gas Utility related to the conduit revenue bond financing. I assume that's what this 5 pounds in our packet is all about. And Tom, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm just going to get out of the way and let Brenda Applegate, the CFO, introduce the people and...
I'm sorry.
I forgot the text motion language.
Okay.
So I'll go print that for you.
All right.
Sherry, she needs an agenda.
I didn't understand you in a second.
That's a hint, Julie. What do you want? Hi, Brenda.
Hi. We have a PowerPoint presentation to provide information relating to the Interior Alaska Natural Gas Utility, IGU, for relating to conduit revenue bond financing that you're going to be listening to later today under agenda item 7B. This is going to be a conduit revenue bond that Ada is going to be issuing, and I would like to invite, is it Mike Newman and Dan Britton? Up to the table. And they have a presentation to just show you what the project, what they've been doing in Fairbanks and a little bit about the utility and their business and forecast. Mike Newman is with Hilltop Securities. He is the financial advisor to IGU, and Dan Britton is president and CEO for IGU, and I'll turn the presentation over to them.
Thank you, Brandon.
So welcome, Dan and Mike. Look forward to your presentation, and how does the board want to ask questions as they go or wait to the end? I'm open to either way.
I would say as we go.
Okay.
I'll start that other way.
Yes, you can. Would, but. All right, so that's, well, as just raise your hand so I can identify you, and then as we go, Dan, just want to kind of give you a heads up how it's going to work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Brenda, appreciate the introduction and the opportunity to be before you again today. It wasn't long ago that we provided an update, so hopefully some of this information isn't old news, but I do see we have some board members that weren't here in our last presentation, so for them it may be helpful. As Brenda indicated, with me today is Mike Newman, has been advising IGU as a financial advisor as we work through the bond process. We also have today in the audience with us Mark Greeno, our issuer's counsel, Brad Walker with Bank of America Underwriter. I have Wes Smith, IGU's controller, and Steve Haggardson, the chair of the Interior Gas Utility. So to the extent I can't or Mike can't answer questions, we have some support in the audience with us today.
Welcome, gentlemen, by the way. Thank you.
Well, I really messed it up now.
You get one to get out of jail free card, Dan. And after that, we're going to add points onto your bonding.
Just scroll. Okay. Thank you.
You're going to make a buck.
All right. We'll see if I can. There we go. Just as a reminder, the Interior Gas Utility, we're a public corporation of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. His mission is to provide low-cost, clean-burning natural gas to the largest number of customers in the borough as possible, as soon as possible. So we've been through a number of iterations with IGU through acquisition first by ADA of Pentex, and then by IGU of the Pentex assets from ADA, and today IGU is the sole provider of natural gas service in Fairbanks. The historical entities that were there, Fairbanks Natural Gas and the other private entities, were in the process of rolling them all together into the single entity, the Interior Gas Utility. We do have a monopoly service for the provision of natural gas in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. It's our goal to bring both economic and environmental well-being to our community and improve the overall lifestyle and quality of life in Fairbanks. As most know, the air quality in Fairbanks can get extremely poor in the winter months, and one of the most recognized ways to improve upon that is the conversion to natural gas from alternative fuel sources. And so we play an important role into the potential benefits or reduction in PM2.5 in our community. From history, the Interior Gas Utility was formed in late 2012 by the Fairbanks North Star Borough in cooperation with the City of Fairbanks and the City of North Pole. Both cities gave their utility powers to the borough, which enabled them to create the utility. And as a municipal utility, we do have the option to be exempt from rate regulation from the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, which we are. Our board of directors will establish the rates of the utility through recommendations from management. One of the guiding principles for the rates has been covered in the finance agreement between the Interior Gas Utility and ADA, which ensures the rates must be established to have full recovery of cost of service and debt service. So that's a protection for not only ADA as a financier, but also bondholders in the future, that our board must establish rates necessary to cover our expenses. When IGU first started out, they had received some funding from the borough. About $3 million was provided from the legislature to the Fairbanks North Star Borough to evaluate the conversion of the community to natural gas, and that those funds were what provided the IGU its initial capitalization to get started. In 2013, IGU was awarded the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity, essentially for the remainder of the populated area of the borough outside of the Fairbanks Natural Gas Certificated Area at the time. So with the two certificated areas, we have a substantial portion of the borough within our service area. As mentioned, in January of 2017, at that time, ADA was the owner of Pentex, and IGU and ADA entered into a utility integration memorandum of understanding, which provided for the opportunity for IGU to purchase the Pentex assets from ADA. The general idea was for there to be created a single operating utility in Fairbanks, and to ensure that the greatest level of benefits could be brought to the utility rather than having two separate operating utilities, which in a community of our size creates additional expense without benefit necessarily to the consumers. So as ADA and IGU developed the MOU, it resulted in a final purchase agreement and a finance agreement. And the finance agreement governed the financing terms of the SETS money that the legislature had provided, $125 million at that time, and how what we're here primarily to talk about today was how the future financing would take place, so the bond financing through the conduit revenue bonds with ADA. So IGU is wholly owned by the borough, but we have a separate legal existence. We have our own board of directors that are managed separately from the borough. IGU's holdings do include all of the assets previously owned by Pentex. For just a reminder, that included Fairbanks Natural Gas, which was the operating utility in Fairbanks, Titan Alaska LNG, which was the liquefaction. It is the liquefaction facility that operates out of Point McKenzie, just outside of Wasilla. Arctic Energy Transportation, which is an entity we established to be in a position to provide LNG fuel services to the transportation industry. One of the things many people don't realize is we do actually have two LNG-powered trucks that haul our LNG between the Point McKenzie facility in Fairbanks. It's those fueling stations, one that's in Big Lake and one that's in Fairbanks, to provide the fuel to those trucks. Long term, we're hoping to see that be an expanded market in Alaska for other trucking companies to be able to utilize. We had another entity, Polar, which is since established, now no longer purely operating, but that was the entity that was looking at developing the North Slope LNG facility when the North Slope was being focused on. The chair didn't see that, so I got a free pass. Our organizational structure is, as you see here, we have IGU, Pentex, F&G, Titan, AET, Polar, and Cassini. I'm the general manager or president of all of the entities that you see there. And then we're moving just to a single entity, the Interior Gas Utility. So we'll be dissolving all of the other entities in the next 6 to 10 months, moving forward with an application with the Regulatory Commission to consolidate our CPCNs. And we're operating as a single entity today, but we'll just move through the logistics of consolidation. And the main purpose is just to simplify our structure and simplify the information in the communities and for others to understand more clearly who we are and what we're out there to do, rather than confusion with multiple entities. The assets that we operate today include the liquefaction facilities mentioned, the transportation assets with AET, or transportation assets, excuse me, in the LNG trailers, the fueling stations of Big Lake and Fairbanks. We have four LNG storage and vaporization facilities, three in Fairbanks and one in Talkeetna. One of the things many people don't know or aren't aware of is we've been serving the Talkeetna Lodge for over 20 years now with a small LNG storage facility. And that's something that is important to just mention, that what we're doing today does have the potential for other opportunities throughout Alaska. And as we build and expand upon our infrastructure, there's potential to leverage that for other opportunities.
Bernie? Yeah, through the chair, Bernie. How many customers do you have off that plant, the one you have in Talkeetna? Is it just one customer or do you have several?
It's a single customer. It's the Lodge. We have the Lodge actually owns a small distribution system on their property that feeds the main Lodge. They have a secondary lodge and then also employee housing. So we have a small storage and vaporization facility, about 10,000 gallons of LNG on site. We vaporize the LNG as they need it, and it's distributed through that small distribution system.
So it's really the hotel?
It's really the hotel. Yeah. The hotel and its employee housing.
Could they pick up other customers? Is it big enough to maintain the other customers in Talkeetna?
There's a potential there that it could be expanded to serve additional customers in Talkeetna. It would require some agreements with the hotel, with the owners, and depending on how it's structured, it may require a CPCN through the Regulatory Commission. If you have any more than 10 customers on a distribution system, it requires an RCA certificate of public convenience and necessity. When it's a business-to-business single customer transaction, that doesn't require RCA oversight. But when there's more than 10 customers, it does. So there's some opportunity there in the future.
Thank you.
The facilities in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. We have our two three existing storage facilities now. One including the big tank that we just recently finished. We have also the distribution systems in both Fairbanks and North Pole, and our operation facilities. Our offices are all in Fairbanks. So as a reminder, the financing that we've been working from really started out with the Alaska Legislature through SB 23, and this authorized ADA to provide financing for the development, construction, and installation of liquefied natural gas production facilities and a system to distribute that natural gas in interior Alaska. Let's see. When ADA received those funds, the first start of the project that was to develop, was looking at developing a liquefaction in the North Slope. That project was later dropped, and HB 105 expanded the SB 23 funds to be able to be used in the Cook Inlet. And ADA, through with the other utilities in developing the North Slope, had spent about $15 million of the original $57.5 million capital appropriation that was made for the project on the North Slope development. The remaining funds at the time of the transfer sale from ADA to Pentex were used for the purchase, about $41 million, and then the remaining purchase price was used through SETS funds, about a little over $20 million of the SETS funds were used for the IGU purchase of Pentex from ADA. The SETS fund started out at $125 million. The fund's been used for the purchase, the funding of the distribution expansion in North Pole, which includes about 70 miles of distribution pipe, and the distribution expansion in Fairbanks, which is about another 70 miles of distribution pipe, were funded with SETS funds, and then the completion of the large storage project that's recently completed, about $57 million. There's a bit of remaining SETS funds available that will be utilized for the North Pole expansion, and then additional funds that this board approved in the last year, totaling about $14 million, allow for the finalization of the North Pole storage and installation of services and meters to new customers. As part of that original financing, there was also the authorization to issue up to $150 million of conduit revenue bonds, originally with the also with the moral obligation of the state of Alaska. The bonds we're talking about today are simply conduit revenue bonds that are not relying on the moral obligation. They will not have the moral obligation of the state of Alaska for this first issuance. We do qualify for the LNG storage tax credits certainly for the large project we just completed. That storage tax credit sunsetted at January 1st, 2020, so the North Pole project does not currently qualify, although we are working with the legislature to see what options we might have to look at that to allow for a qualification of that facility. So the facility we just built could receive up to $15 million of storage tax credits if and when the legislature were to fund those credits. But we are in the pot with everybody else in the exploration tax credits that have not been funded in the recent years, so there are some risks associated with that. As you know, in the finance agreement, we included the $125 million of SETS funds. And then in 2019, ADA agreed to increase the availability of those SETS funds by another $10 million for a total of $135 million. And then as part of this bonding work that we've been doing and the removal of the moral obligation, we increased the SETS for an additional $4 million. So the total SETS funds available for the project are total now $139 million. Some of the key terms for the SETS loan, which play an important role in the bond offering that we're putting together include the 0% interest rate and deferral of principal payments for the first 15 years. That's really what provides the high level of security to the bondholders as we work through the growth for this utility and the demand risk associated with that growth. So for the first 15 years, we don't have any payment due on the SETS funds. After that, for a 35-year period, it's at 0.25%. So the funds that the legislature provided for this project really are allowing for the benefits that we're trying to achieve in the community. And we're very important in our credit rating, which I believe, Brenda, you just passed out the draft report from the Fitch Credit Agency. I am happy to report that as we envisioned our public credit rating that will come out tomorrow, is that right? 5 o'clock tonight. We have received a triple B minus investment grade rating on the bonds that are contemplated in this offering. So
what kind of interest rate does that relate to, Dan?
Well, before that question, Mike, at the movie Target, but our last run at it, I think, was January 22nd, and with a 25 basis point premium, or let's say cushion, we were at 3.7, just below 3.7.
What was the cost of capital?
It was the total all-in cost of capital.
And rates have dropped significantly since then.
They dropped yesterday, didn't they?
So, timing is good for the potential issuance.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah. In addition to the 15-year deferral, if our growth or demand isn't meeting what our expectations have indicated in our pro formas, there's an opportunity for an additional 5-year deferral of the SETS funds, at which time the interest would kick in, but principal payments would be deferred an additional 5 years. So provides that added layer of support for that demand risk component of our project. And that's really the whole reason for the state's involvement, was the demand risk associated with this. We have a lot of high capital expense projects that need to be built prior to the customer demand coming online. So in order to be able to add new customers, we need the infrastructure to provide the supply, and we need the security for them to rely on. And then we have the risk associated with those customers converting from their alternate fuel sources. So that's the whole purpose of the Interior Energy Project, recognize that risk and provided the tools from the legislature through ADA to allow the community to work through that. So the bonding authority right now has been extended to July 1st, 2023. The original sunset for the bonding authority was in 2018. It was renewed again to an additional 5 years to July 1st, 2023. It now allows us to issue up to a principal amount up to $136 million. The initial enabling legislation had a total cap on the SETS and bonding authority of $275 million. So with the additional SETS monies that the ADA provided, reduced the bond level by that $14 million. The total still has to be within the $275. So that's why you see the difference between the $150 and the $136 shared here. We have agreed, both ADA and IGU, that this initial offering would be done without the moral obligation of the state of Alaska. So again, as mentioned, this would be solely on the basis of the IGU's credit rating. It's important to note that the Fitch credit rating on the bonds did not now nor ever include assumption of the moral obligation. It's separate from any consideration of the moral obligation. It's on IGU's ability to repay through our revenues solely.
So my iPhone doesn't go, I don't know if I'm doing it right. So the proposed bond sale, what is your payment per per month or per year, you think? What do you think it's going to be?
It ranges from a little under $3 million a year to just over $5 million a year. You've got the cash flow there.
Turned right on sideways.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
What's that?
Turn sideways. I'm trying to do this way. That's right. You turn that, you get the hole.
Trying to see if it has the cash flows in there.
I'm going, God damn, what's wrong with this?
It's capitalized interest in the initial years while it ramps up. So we're actually borrowing to pay interest while IGE builds out the system and people convert. Debt service ratio, the net debt service ranges from about 3.5 up to a high of 5.3 and then goes back down. The debt service on this bond issue has been structured in contemplation of future issuance of debt by IGE to build out the system. So once done, while there will be three separate issuance taken together, it will provide a level of debt service structure. So this debt service is a little, it ramps up, ramps down. It's providing the foundation for the future issuance so that overall, IGU has a level of debt service that provides predictability and cost both to the board and the trade.
Later on in the presentation, we have some information on our financial performance and some of that.
You have a lot of pages there, Dan.
We do have a lot of pages. I'll try and move along.
I hope you talk fast because we got a pretty full agenda for us today.
Let me move a little quicker for you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for all the details.
I know you traveled a long way, but...
I'm just trying to get my five cents right.
Okay.
We did recognize that there were some new board members wanting to provide the...
I heard they're pretty good readers.
I'm pretty. I'll move on. I got the message. Thank you. We already talked about the rate covenant. We do have agreement in the finance agreement on the debt service coverage ratio for the bonds. We'll be looking at a minimum 1.2 debt service coverage ratio. This is a reminder in the finance agreement. ADA does have to approve any other additional debt that IGU wants to issue in excess of $1 million individually or $5 million in aggregate. So ADA continues to have some oversight on the utility of the issue if we wanted to issue additional debt in the future. I think we can skip some of this as you're quite familiar with, many people are quite familiar with the historical finance agreement. Mm-hmm. This is a quick shot. You can see what our service territory is, and as you can see from the map, it is pretty extensive in Fairbanks, including most of the more densely populated areas.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for those that are presenting, I did receive the entire packet electronically and was able to read all of the documents. And actually, IGU has an excellent website that you can go back and review your meeting minutes clear back to before 2015. And so I did take time to go onto your website and review several different meetings where this topic was discussed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you. Some of this other information is actually supportive of really the Fitch rating and the bond offering. It talks about top 10 customers. Really the basic message there is we do have a significant amount of diversification in our customer base, and we're not, we don't have any excess liability related to a single customer. This is just shows you what our customer base and forecasted gas sales in the future. As you can see, we're predicting growing from current customer base of a little over 1,100, close to 1,200, up to about 6,000 by 2029, broken out in the demand is by customer class, single family through interruptible large customers.
So Dan, that's a pretty important document page right there, and kind of everything falls behind that, I would assume, right? Your forecast demand. Obviously, you've got to be pretty comfortable in that.
Yeah, so it's been stress tested a number of times. Originally, we were looking at an anticipated maybe 50% conversion rate or greater. And then we saw oil prices drop while we were in the middle of all of these conversations. And that caused everybody to just pause a little bit, take a look at it again. We had actually Ada had commissioned Cardinal Entrex to do the conversion analysis. They went back and did a sensitivity on the comparisons between the cost of gas and cost of the oil and what that meant related to conversion. IGU board settled in on a 35% conversion rate over a 10-year period for residential customers, given the prices of oil and gas. And so we're in that range where our current price of gas and the price of oil over the last year or two supports that 35% conversion number. So it's 35% residential, 70% commercial. Commercial customers have a different driving decision-making profile than residential customers. We have many commercial customers that convert solely for the reason to get oil tanks off of their property. They don't want buried oil tanks on the property any longer. It's a significant environmental risk and a significant financial risk for many commercial property owners. And they will make the conversion just so they can get those tanks removed and remove that future liability. And they use a lot more energy, so any savings they do have results in a much quicker payback. So we see a higher uptick in the commercial customers, a quicker conversion than residential. So it is important. That's the whole underlying purpose for the IEP and the project is recognition that there is some conversion risk. And we need to have an opportunity for this utility to complete these big capital projects and have some breathing room in the repayment of the high cost of that, or the cost of those projects while we increase demand.
Thank you, John.
Julie?
Yes, for the record, Julie Anderson. So the Fort Wainwright is not based in any of the decision making, is it? And is there any interest in expanding your reach to Wainwright?
That's correct. So neither Fort Wainwright, Golden Valley Electric, or any other military base in Fairbanks, we've also got Allison, they are not included as potential customers in these pro formas. Those are potential upside. We are in active conversations with Fort Wainwright on a couple of opportunities. Most specifically is they are in the just started out an EIS on replacement of their current power plant, mm-hmm. Fort Wainwright. It's approximately 60 years old. It's a coal-fired facility that provides combined heat and power to the base. They've identified four options and that they have. One is do nothing, which on a 60-year-old coal-fired power plant at the base, I think most would share in my opinion that to do nothing is not a real option. Second is to replace it with another coal-fired facility, and this, as we know, coal is not necessarily a preferred energy choice in today's world. The other two are natural gas related. Replace the combined heat and power plant with a natural gas combined heat and power plant, or move to a distributed energy model on base where they put in individual boilers or boilers in groups that provide the heat source, and then move to grid power, so power from Golden Valley Electric. So those are the four options they're looking at. They're a number of years out. I think probably 7 to 10 before they actually are implementing a decision that they make. But there's some shorter term opportunities there to participate in some potential load. But long answer to your question, but it's an important one. Those are not included in these numbers.
Thank you.
So Dan, are state, borough, or city facilities, schools anticipated to convert?
Yeah, we do have a fairly high level of participation from the Fairbanks North Star Borough schools today. So we expect that the facilities in North Pole would follow, borough-owned facilities, schools, their office buildings and others. So the borough and the mayor, current administration, are extremely supportive of this project. Just recently, they instituted a conversion incentive program for converting from gas to oil. The borough funded $1 million to that program, so converting customers can get a rebate of $2,500 for a burner conversion, or up to $7,500 if they replace their entire boiler. So significant credit program for those customers. Additionally, the EPA has funded for many years now in Fairbanks a solid fuels exchange program. It's So customers converting from a wood stove or other solid fuel device can get up to $14,000 of their conversion paid through that grant program.
And how about the state facilities?
So the state facilities, we're certainly hopeful that they will get on board with the conversion of all of those in support of our air quality efforts.
You hear that, Julie? They're hopeful.
That's
but
great.
There's not been a not been a definitive agreement yet or real.
You have grants for the
discussion.
State to convert?
Just recently, with the completion of the storage project, we, for the first time in a long time, have the ability to add customers again and have that supply definitively available to do that.
What would it cost the state to convert their facilities to gas up there? Has anybody got a number for that?
I don't have a number for all of the state's owned facilities, so I don't know. Sorry.
Is there any way we could figure that out?
I'm sure we could come up with a reasonable estimate. There's probably been some work done by the state, I would imagine, related to energy efficiency improvements, and within those studies is probably some consideration of upgrades of their boilers and their furnaces, etc.
Can't we increase your bond, take care of the state buildings?
We'd like to, if the state would like to start paying some of those bonds. But
well, I mean, I think they should.
Within our bond offering today, the two primary projects we're looking to fund is the LNG storage, or excuse me, the LNG production facility, Point McKenzie, and then about $10 million of the total amount is for service lines, meters, and distribution systems. So a significant amount, or quite a bit of it's for new customer addition, which would include
the state buildings.
State buildings, et cetera. So the utility subsidizes the cost of the service line installation. Customers pay a total, including the excess flow valve, about $225 for the service line.
Oof,
and the
nothing.
Utility pays for us. We're the cheapest game in town related to getting utility service.
So this is a volume-driven enterprise, right? Yeah. The more volume, the lower the cost, to a point. So is there a way that we could find out what the state would what volume the state would add to your use if they converted?
Yeah, we
and
have.
And what the economic benefit would be to the rest of the consumers?
Yes.
Okay.
We certainly.
I would ask that. I think that would be very important.
We'd like to hook them up this spring. All the state buildings.
Everybody.
All the state buildings done by April or into May.
We don't start construction until June 15th. Can you give us to the end of June?
End of June. That's fine. Yes.
Well, again, the avoidance would be not to them to spend a bunch of money like the university did for a new coal fire plant. And so, you know, it's a volume driven business model, and you need the volume. So I'm just curious, you know, the state's in for more than a pound. On supporting this project, I think there's more to the support than just dollars.
There certainly is, and the state does have some sizable infrastructure in Fairbanks. The DOT facilities mm-hmm. would be one that just pops to mind, you know, where like, we have a line that runs right in front, and it's a pretty good-sized complex there that have many buildings and for their maintenance, et cetera. So
office building downtown.
On Hager Road, yeah. So there certainly are a number of buildings that could materially contribute to the demand.
Yeah.
Do you have gas in Fairbanks, like on 7th Street, where their building is there?
We're close. I don't know if we have it right in front of that street or not. But.
Well, anyway, I think that would be good.
You got until the end of June. No problem.
It's a good point, one well taken, and certainly one that we'll look to move on.
We're worried about we'll take the big dollars first. We'll worry about the nickel later.
Just it brings to mind. So our customer base right now is about almost 50% residential, 50% commercial in customer numbers, but in volume it's 90% commercial, 10% residential. So you know, a Home Depot or a large box store uses about the same amount of energy as over 100 homes. So it puts that commercial, the importance of the commercial market in perspective.
Okay.
Some additional information related to customer gas sales and demand. It's part of your packet, part of our pro forma that supports the revenues that would support the bond offering. One of the things that is supporting the project and continues to is the poor air quality in Fairbanks and the fact that natural gas is going to be a major contributor, if not the main thing that can help Fairbanks become an attainment area. And as we advance regulation and policies that look to get Fairbanks in attainment, and the state is now doing so, there's restrictions that are being put on alternative, or on the alternative. So instead of customers being able to burn number two oil, there's now beginning, I think it's July 1st of next year, and I don't have, might be even sooner, they're no longer able to sell number two oil to these customers. Number one is more expensive, less BTUs per gallon. So the competitive advantage to switch to natural gas is benefited by that rulemaking. So we're seeing other drivers that support conversion to the natural gas beyond.
So how about newer replacement of boilers? Is it, you know, the city of Fairbanks, the city of North Pole, they have building regulations. Have they done anything that says if you're going to build a new facility that the boiler's got to be at least dual feed or dual burn, gas and oil, or if you're going to get a permit to replace a boiler with a new boiler with the incentive programs that they have, that it's at least dual feed so that you can convert at some point in time if the owner elects to?
Not yet. There's been, for the most part, the borough has focused on incentive.
This would be the city of Fairbanks and the city of North Pole.
Yeah.
Which are basically, if I remember right, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, they're the ones authorizing the borough to actually have a utility. That's right.
They are. The city of Fairbanks, the city of North Pole give their utility powers to the borough to enable them to.
Does it make sense to ask them to do to put a regulation in place for their both the councils to do something like this? As long as it doesn't, I don't see how it could cost the consumer any more money if there's a program that helps facilitate the difference in cost between the boilers.
For the interior gas filling air program, yes, it would make sense for there to be those things in place. To date, the borough and neither of the cities have wanted to weigh in on the restrictive regulations related to choices for your fuel source so far.
You're not restricting the source. What you're doing is just giving them making it so there's an option so a future tenant or owner would be able to convert so they choose instead of putting in a one source fuel, oil. I guess it goes to an energy policy and it goes to, are you in for a penny or a pound? And are these communities really supporting this? I mean, to me, it would be a no-brainer that they should do this just to support your efforts and the borough's efforts.
Good point. To date, they haven't. We'll continue the conversation with them. The one thing that I would just point to is that $1 million that the borough did dedicate to the conversion from oil to gas. So that's a pretty supportive measure that they've taken as it relates to this project. So
how about the city of Fairbanks and the city of North Pole? What do they contribute?
Neither have contributed specifically to the financial program yet, although we do have agreements with the city of Fairbanks related to our permitting of the service lines, et cetera, to reduce their fees associated with that and help us streamline that permitting effort.
What is the total support from the state through ADA? How many dollars?
Our SEPS loan is $139 million.
Okay, plus the grant money.
Plus the $57.5 million, that was a capital appropriation.
$190, $200 million roughly? So the state supporting the mission. Sounds like the borough supporting the mission. Sounds like we have a void with the city of Fairbanks and the city of North Pole. And I would suggest, unless the board has a different opinion, that our executive director write each mayor asking for their support and that they do something about new furnaces or replacements. Tom, you have a suggestion on that?
Sounds like a fine way to start a conversation.
Yeah.
That's
Julie?
Kind of a follow-up to that. So how many residential homes or even commercial would have to convert for Fairbanks to reach the clean air standard that they're trying to reach. Have you done that analysis?
Yeah, it's substantial. It would require the completion of phase 2 and 3 of our distribution expansion for us to get there in combination with other programs. I don't have the total number off the top of my head, but that information is available, I think, through the EPA and through the state.
But it'd be more than 1,000?
It's more than 1,000. We have over 1,000 customers today. It's in the 6,000 plus range for us to get totally there.
And the current program, if my math is correct, with this, I think it's the borough is providing, would help 125 homes potentially, right?
Yeah, the $1 million, depending on how many are at the $7,500 and how many at the $2,500 level. And we're hoping that $1 million is the starting point and an opportunity to leverage perhaps other programs and federal programs to provide additional assistance. The solid fuels exchange program through the federal program, they have been receiving about $5 million a year over the last number of years and have a current application for that. But it's limited to converting from a solid fuel to another choice. So.
And then just finally, is the city of North Pole and Fairbanks, there are other facilities on natural gas?
So we don't have the gas in our lines in North Pole yet. Mm-hmm. So they're yet to be have the opportunity. The city of Fairbanks, we don't have a gas line in front of the main city hall, and they have limited other structures. Most of them are borough structures. The schools and the borough buildings are, for the most part, on gas now. The Big Dipper and things like that that the borough operates have made the conversion.
Trying to help you, Dan.
We appreciate it. We're there with you. There are, as you are aware, probably political concerns related to some of those decisions. Fairbanks can be a tough place sometimes with regards to some of those issues, as we saw with the vote related to the local control of the air quality issue being moved to the state, et cetera. So I think we'll evolve over time. To get there, it just might not be overnight. But certainly, we would love to see the continuation of those programs and the support for the document. So some of the programs we did talk about, there are the state and the borough regulations that are in place, and I think we'll just continue to see some additional pressure as it relates to, you know, wood burning, more bans, so the benefits of wood burning are diminished when you have more and more wood burning bans throughout the community. Reductions on the fuels that can be burnt, number 2 to number 1. And I think we're going to see some additional pressure on some of the larger burners for some, like Golden Valley, perhaps having to move to best available control technologies and other decisions that would result in significant capital expense to burn these alternate sources, and so the environmental driver to natural gas improves. This is a quick highlight. We talked about a capital improvement program that essentially we've got the acquisition of Fairbanks, we've got the expansion of the liquefaction facilities, Titan 2, and ultimately another train, Titan 3. Transportation, storage and vaporization, distribution, and then program management. And this, you can see the various capital expenditures or projections for those categories. The Fairbanks storage facilities was the one that's just recently been completed at the 57. And then the North Pole storage facility will be under construction this summer.
How much gas do you presently have in the tank in town, the new tank?
Not very much. We completed the tank at the end of November and completed the cool town into December and got about 2 feet or 200,000 gallons of LNG in the tank prior to the cold hitting. We didn't plan on getting a lot in through this winter, but we've had an a very cold winter in Fairbanks. January, as you've probably seen, was one of the top five of extended cold periods below 5 degrees, negative 5 degrees. February, so January was actually the largest volume sold in our existence in the gas company since we started. That's our highest monthly sales ever. February, it was the second coldest February in heating degree days since we've been keeping track in 1998. So our volume's been high. All of our production's been dedicated to current customers. We are just now, as we move through March here, starting to dedicate some of our production into filling the tank again.
Okay.
That's the design of the tank, was to, its purpose is to fill it in our off-peak so we can keep our current production base loaded and then draw it down during the peak to supplement our supply and add more customers. The capital program, that just lays out where the funding sources are coming from, the set, the appropriation, the bond series that we're talking about, some commercial financing, hopefully the state of Alaska tax credit, and then we've got some other debt or cash from the facility.
So you've got the, so I guess I was a little surprised, I heard that it went from, the original number was $60 million, which that says, but now it's, what is it, 72?
So the authorizing resolution is 78.
Million.
So there's $60 million is for the project funds, the bond proceeds. We do have for the capitalized interest fund, which makes up about $6 million.
Yes.
And then a debt service reserve fund of just short of $5 million. So we have to have a debt service reserve fund as part of this, so we'll use bonds to fund that program. And then we've allowed for interest rate differences between the time of authorization and the time of issuance. So the authorization is for 78. That's not to say we will issue the 78 when necessary, but if we didn't provide some flexibility and room and we interest rates change somewhat between the authorization and the issuance, we might not have appropriate authorities and that would potentially have to come back. So that's the explanation between the two. $60 million for projects, so project funds. The others are reserve funds and flexibility and rate.
So does IGU have a rule that you have to have so many dollars in your bank account at all times?
We don't have we have a minimum debt service reserve coverage ratio of 1.2 that'll be part of the bonds. And then before we issue future debt as part of the master trust indenture,
it's in 1.2.
Yeah, there's a look back or a look forward that'll have to be satisfied before we issue additional debt. We do right now have a pretty significant cash balance, available capital. Close to $6 million. So the inventory for the new tank is being funded through operating cash.
So do you have a minimum level you're going to take that reserve cash to? Is there a minimum as a board?
We do not have a minimum established board policy yet.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
When there are three male voices that go through a tape recording, that's where the difficulty comes. This is Anna McKinnon speaking. That's when the clerks are having trouble keeping track of who's speaking. So, Mr. Britton, if you change,
they don't mind.
If you would please identify yourself so those that are listening online would know who's speaking, it would be helpful for those that are trying to follow the conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Dan.
So, this is Dan Britton. No, we have not established a minimum cash balance yet.
And do you anticipate that to happen?
Yes, likely to happen. We're IGU is this Dan Britton. IGU is a pretty new utility. We'll be continually adding policies necessary to ensure we're operating as a well-run utility. We look to people such as Mike Newman here for things that would bolster our position as it relates to bondholders and comfort level. If that's something that people view as beneficial, we would institute a number of those financial policies as necessary. So.
Thank you.
As part of our, again, this is Dan Britton speaking, as part of our bond offering, we contracted with NewGen Strategies to build our capital planning model for IGU and to provide the third-party consultant verification or report analysis of our project. So that'll be part of our information. Some of the principal considerations, we've got a financial forecast covering a 20-year period. Right now in our capital plan as agreed to in the ADA finance agreement includes the IGU phases 1, 2, and 3. We do have phases 4, 5, and 6 that have been identified as part of our project, but those have been are not agreed to as phases that would be included with the current financing mechanism. And would be well down into the future. We do have the ability to pause for phases 2 and 3 and for the further expansion of the liquefaction if our demand profile is not matching expectations. So we can pause and limit our future capital expenses if necessary. I think I've covered most of the information on this financing plan. Yeah, I'll pass this slide on to Mike, and it's further to some of the questions that you had, Mr. Chairman, related to the comparison between the $60 million and the $70 million.
Thank you, Dan. Mike?
This is Mike Newman, Financial Advisor at Hilltop Securities. The proposed issue, Mr. Chairman, going back to your question, is designed to fund the project fund of $60 million, capitalize interest and debt service reserves, and the cost of issuance. We anticipate selling approximately $61 million worth of bonds, but we need to raise a certain amount of proceeds, which total approximately $72 million. Bonds typically carry, it's referred to as a coupon, or the bonds have a stated interest rate. Historically or recently, they're usually 4 or 5%. That interest rate on your bond is well above market rates, so investors pay you a premium for that higher interest rate. So when we look at sizing the bond issue, you want to sell enough bond principal and realize enough premiums, original issue premiums, because we're providing above market interest rate, to fund everything we need. Because the amount of premium we get changes with movements in interest rate, we size the request for consideration by ADA by looking at how much bonds do we need plus premium to fund the project itself and the financing and capitalized interest. Because not knowing what that allocation will be between bonds and premium, we know how much we need. So we simply added that together to come up with the $72 million, and then we used a little fudge factor, we rounded up, in case we miss something. Because when you go to sell bonds, if this body chooses to authorize the issuance, we can be authorized for more bonds than we sell, but we cannot sell $1 more of bonds than we're authorized for. So we don't want to fall short. When we looked at these bonds, as I mentioned, we'll fund the project fund, reserve fund, capitalized interest. They are tax-exempt bonds, bearing a fixed rate of interest, 30-year final maturity, so at issuance, the credit risk of IGU passes to the investor. The rates are set to maturity. No action is needed. They will not change. It is expected that IGU will have the ability to optionally redeem or refinance these bonds to take advantage of lower rates in the future if they present themselves. When we last looked at this, the interest rates, the cost of capital, is what I prefer to focus on as opposed to interest rate, because that is your interest rate plus your cost of financing, was approximately 3.64, as Dan mentioned earlier. Rates have gone down since then, so we're hoping we may be able to do better than that. But I was raised to be better to underpromise and overperform.
than the reverse. This bond issue is being structured in a manner to facilitate financing for phase two and phase three in future. When this process was undertaken and analysis has been done, this financing will stand on its own. It is not relying on phase two or phase three to repay these bonds. Phase two will be done if circumstances warrant, and if phase two is done, phase two will not be relying on phase three. Each is being done on a compartmentalized basis, standalone basis. Cash flows and analysis have been looked at by the consulting engineer provided to the rating agencies, looking at all three issuances that are planned in accordance with authorization, as well as if only this issuance is done, as well as if there's a delay in conversions. So that when Dan mentioned stress, these were some of the stress tests that were done. The bonds themselves can be secured solely by the revenues of IGU. There will be no provision of a mortgage or any interest in any property, plant, and equipment. That is the sole province of ADA under the financing agreement. On the basis of solely the revenues of IGU, Fitch Ratings yesterday went to committee and assigned an investment grade rating of BBB- to the bonds to be issued by IGU in full knowledge not only of this financing but all future contemplated financings. They looked at it in totality. I apologize, it was only at the beginning of this meeting you were handed a 10-page report that we received very late last night, which now will be, if it's not public, it will be public in the next 10 minutes. And it clearly, it's, in my opinion, a very thoughtful report. It demonstrates a complete understanding of IGU, its challenges, its leverage, and the reduction in leverage over time. While we sit before you today, and 2 weeks or so ago, you received documents, this process actually started, from my perspective, December a year ago. In July, representatives from Fitch came to Port McKenzie, together with representatives of Bank of America, who are going to underwrite the bonds, to do due diligence, to meet with Dan, to meet with Wes, to meet with Steve as chair of the board. They went down to Fairbanks toward those facilities. So it was not a question of someone simply looking at numbers. They looked at the numbers, they looked at the audits, they had conversations with the consulting engineer. They saw the facilities sat across the table from Dan and Wes and asked probing questions. And have been convinced and believe that IGU can execute the plan before you. As Dan mentioned, there is a rate covenant for these bonds of 1.1. The ADA itself has its own provisions regarding additional debt being incurred. As Dan mentioned earlier, the bondholders will have their requirements as well. IGU really helps in the highest standard between the two. Both will have to be satisfied going forward, break covenants, additional debt tests, etc. The market is very favorable. We have representatives from Merrill Lynch here if you have any questions about their ability to sell the bonds. But in today's market, not only are rates low, but investors are looking for an opportunity to earn yield, making this more attractive. And the volume of tax-exempt debt has been reduced following the tax law changes in December of 2017. So we have not only a very low interest rate environment in our favor, investors seeking yield, we also have a larger supply. So it's an opportune time, which will position IGU long-term for the future.
Great, thank you.
In the last few pages, Mr. Chair, this is Dan Britton, our financial pro forma excerpts, just really establishing what our revenues are projected to be and our coverage ratio that support the bond issuance. I won't get into those details in the interest of time. I know you have a lot of other things that
we want to get us to discuss this.
Yeah. So with that, Mr. Chair, we appreciate your time. We're done with the presentation. Happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you. Questions? A question? Come on, yeah.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this is Albert Fogel. My question is in regards to the cost of the financing and how much in services we're paying to Hilltop Services Securities and the Bank of America and potentially to any other financial services company. Do you have an idea, or could you provide us with how much it's costing the IGU to put this all together and to sell the bonds, and how much each company is going to discharging the IGU for their services?
Do you want to cover that? On page 27 of the packet, there's a total estimated cost of issuance of just under $1.2 million for the project, broken out. I don't have it specifically for the various entities, but Mike can maybe.
This is Mike Greenwell with Hilltop Securities. The cost of issuance, we were selected pursuant to a request for a proposal process, competitive selection. Our proposal was submitted at $75,000 or $70,000 plus travel. That was based on the issuance of bonds supported by the moral obligation pledge of the state of Alaska. We subsequently worked with IGU. We issued requests for proposals for underwriters as part of the competitive process. The professionals were all secured through competitive procurement. At that time, Bank of America was selected based on not just price, but quality. They are the largest underwriter of municipal power debt in the United States, and had a great deal of confidence in them from working with them and other clients in the power industry. And they have both retail and institutional distribution. We also thought and discussed at the time of selection, IGU is a first-time issuer. You're judged by the company you keep. So we looked at that, and the syndicate was filled out with Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, with whom IGU has an existing relationship. So by having those firms, it signals to investors, these are firms that don't do bad deals. We are the third largest municipal advisor in the country. We have our own reputation. So things were selected on that basis. As part of the procurement of underwriters, they submitted recommended counsel to serve as their counsel. IGU did a separate procurement for special counsel and disclosure counsel. So everybody was indeed hired through a competitive process. The existing rates that were proposed by the professionals envisioned debt A plus by Fitch based on moral obligation, and were expected to be issued in the fall of last year. Due to discussions between ADA and IGU, these bonds will not have the moral obligation and carry a very different credit rating. So we're in the process of revisiting fees so that they're appropriate. I argue that you want to compensate your underwriter appropriately. You don't want to overpay by any means, but you want to pay them to make those extra phone calls to investors to enhance demand, because one basis point in interest, or 0.0001, is worth far more than a dollar of takedown. Over time, that one basis point is worth far more. I personally have a fiduciary duty to IGU, which means I have to put their needs and their goals ahead of my own. And one of my responsibilities is control costs and make sure they are appropriate. That is one of my charges.
Thank you. Bernie?
Yeah, this is through the chair. I would just like to say thank you. You know, it's been a long trail here for Fairbanks to get any gas. 60 years. And the best time to plant a tree was 30 years ago. Well, we didn't do it 30 years ago or 60 years ago, but you planted one now. No simple solutions, only intelligent choices. And I think there's been a lot of intelligent choices made. You know, I didn't agree with everything that went on, but I voted for it because it's time to plant the tree. So I compliment all of you.
So everything was good. I'm glad I didn't hear Wells Fargo. And I'm glad I didn't hear J.P. Morgan. Sad I had to hear Goldman Sachs. So just, I want to make sure I'm on the record.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say to Mr. Britton, you know, please make sure in the future with these additional tranches that you take that sensitivity into consideration.
And Bank of America is our lead on the project, and that's those recent issues happened after
I'm sure.
Moved on. Yeah, agreed.
Okay.
Anna? Mr. Chairman, we haven't had time to review the draft report. I would like to know from staff if we
I can confirm that that's released if it's happening during our board meeting, the Fitch report. And then my question is about the $60 million versus the $78 million that we're looking at in some of the slides. Could you speak to that? Because the bond rating specifically speaks to revenue bonds and the grading at $60
million. This is Mike New with Hilltop Securities. The goal of the analyst was to have the report that you were handed distributed to the public by 5 o'clock. New York time is now 5 o'clock, so that was his goal, to have it out by now. If it's not out by now, it will be out.
It was an hour ago.
Yeah.
We're actually 4 hours.
I'm sorry, I know. Texas, I keep thinking in terms of three. So it should be out by public. I apologize. In terms of the dollar amount, the proceeds are approximately, $72 million. But to realize $72 million in proceeds, we're still only issuing $61 million worth of bonds, right in the expectations of Fitch. And we talked to him as recently as this morning over breakfast. They're fully aware. They have seen the cash flows that you have seen. They have seen these numbers. They are fully aware.
Sure. Further questions? Thank you for the presentation, Dan.
Yeah, just lastly, I'd like to thank Brenda and her team with Ada. As always, they are great to work with. It's a lot of effort that goes in, not by our team alone, but by the Ada team also. And well, thank you.
Well, based on the volume of pages there, if someone spent a lot of time and effort and dollars on it.
Yeah. We've all read every page.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. Thank you. Okay, so further to item A on the new business, I will entertain a motion to go into executive session to discuss confidential financial information related to the IGU Mustang Development Project, Ketchikan Shipyard, Alaska Ship and Dry Dock, X LLC, and personnel matters.
This is Bill. I move that the board enter an executive session to discuss confidential financial information related to the Interior Gas Utility Mustang Development Project, Teskan Shipyard, Alaska Ship and Dry Dock, X LLC, and personal matters.
Second. All right. Is there any objection by the board going to executive session? Hearing none, we are going to executive session. Tom, are we doing it? Where are we doing it?
That's your choice, Mr. Chairman. I think we have enough people that this would be a practicable room.
Okay. So why don't we take a 5-minute break and we'll start it again. Thank you.